Okay, welcome back to Gary's Economics. Today we are going to ask the question, can labour be saved? Okay, so this is the first ever part two of a two-part video this week. So last week we discussed the question of whether labour have been unlucky and whether global centre-left political parties have been unlucky, and that is why they were very unpopular. And the conclusion that I came to is they're not unlucky in the way that they like to say they are. They like to say they have inherited bad economies from the right, from the centre-right, and that's nothing to do with them. In reality, the weakening economies were predictable long before Labour came into power. I've been predicting them for 5 years. I tried my best to let Labour know before they came into power that there was going to be big problems of government spending, government funding, big problems of inequality, and they ignored it. So they are not unlucky in the sense that the economic problems were unpredictable. But where they are unlucky is that the economic problems that Labour are facing and the UK economy is facing is not at all unique. This problem of weakening economy, falling living standards, has basically been experienced by every government in the UK for the last 15 years. It brought down Rishi Sunak for the same reason that it's bringing down Keir Starmer. It will bring down Nigel Farage if and when he comes into power. The same thing is happening to Donald Trump in America. The same thing is happening to the German government, the French government, the Spanish government, the Italian government, even the Japanese government, the Australian government. This is happening to governments all over the world. It's not a Labour specific problem. And what this is really is more of a broad intellectual failing where our economists and our politicians are simply unable to recognise that we have a structural growing problem of growing wealth inequality, and that is the cause of the economic crisis. Okay, so once we accept that what we have is a broad intellectual failing, that raises the question of what do we do? We're in a situation here where inequality continues to rise. That means that living standards will continue to fall. It's important that we recognise that is like really, really serious. That means people not being able to heat their homes, feed their kids, buy houses, have families, have financial security. It's going to be really, really serious here and across the world. So we need to ask ourselves, what can we do? How can we get governments to change policy to stop inequality from rising, which basically means policy on taxation, wealth taxes? And here in this country, and I think in most countries, you basically have two choices. Assuming you don't get anything on inequality and taxation from the right and the centre right, which I think is probably true, you have to either build a new political party or try and influence your centre left parties. Here in this country, under our first past the post political system, which I think is a bit of a stupid system, it is very, very difficult to displace political parties. So we need to figure out, can we save Labour? So that raises the big two questions of this video. Why have Labour failed to recognise inequality as the core central message, and can they be saved? Okay, so you know, I speak about why they failed a lot. I spoke about it a lot in last week's video. This is a misdiagnosis of an economic problem. Economists don't look at inequality a lot. We have a crisis of falling living standards being caused by growing inequality, and economists are missing it, and that's causing political parties, including Labour, to miss it. Why that is happening, I think, to be honest, I'm not 100% sure. I've got a lot of theories and we're going to run through them. It's important that we understand why these guys are missing it if we want to move into a more sensible position. A big part of this, in my opinion, is coming from problems in the academic discipline of economics. So economics in the way that it is understood and taught at universities. I've spoken about this in some past videos. Maybe we'll flash a link up to Why Economists Are Always Wrong, which is a cool video, me walking around Oxford years ago when we used to do things like that. When you study economics at university nowadays, it is a very complicated and difficult and extremely mathematical subject. You spend an enormous amount of time doing complicated algebra, complicated calculus. If you take it to postgrad or PhD or postdoc level, you are going to spend 10 years doing complicated calculus and algebra on very, very mathematically complicated models, almost all of which contain no inequality. This is a very, very effective way of training economists not to think about the economy in terms of inequality. If you have spent 10 years locked in stuffy, windowless university library rooms doing simultaneous equations and complicated algebra and calculus, when you see a real world economic problem, you are going to have a very strong temptation to try to apply the things you learned and the things you studied at university. If you spent 10 years studying very, very complicated mathematical models that include no inequality, you are very, very unlikely to look at an economic problem and think maybe this is being caused by inequality. I think there's also a kind of hothouse, very competitive culture within economics specifically, although I do think it's happening in a lot of academic disciplines, which really, really aggressively rewards students for studying and writing papers on kind of fashionable ideas and not really stepping outside the box and writing about things which are unfashionable, like inequality. You know, a good example of this is Ha-Jun Chang, who is a Korean economics professor who I think is a really smart guy, really thoughtful. I've got a lot of time from, we had him on the channel earlier this year. He writes a lot of great books about things like how Korea went from being poor to being rich. He has a lot of things to say about how countries can improve living standards. And yet, because he does not talk and write in the way which is approved within economics, despite the fact that he is the best selling economics author in the entire country, he is largely shunned and ignored within economics. Another great example is Thomas Piketty, French economist who had a very prestigious, illustrious, successful economics career, who decided in 2011, I'm going to start talking about inequality, probably because he was smart enough to recognize what a big deal it was. And since then has been kind of criticized, attacked, shunned and sidelined a lot within the economics community. So within economics as a whole, you have a discipline which is not able really to look or think in terms of inequality and tends to punish people who think outside the box, who are willing to think in different terms. I think COVID is a great example of this. We had the crisis, which from the very beginning, it should have been obvious was going to cause a massive increase in inequality. And yet basically nobody in academia, in the think tanks, the central banks, which are kind of extensions of academia, was ever able or willing to think about it in terms of inequality, in terms of distribution. You then have the additional factor that specifically within economics, you have this other optional career path, which aggressively rewards people who think outside the box and challenge conventional wisdom, which is trading. So I have studied at the London School of Economics and at Oxford. I can tell you with a very high level of confidence, the vast majority of economics undergrads really, really want to work in finance jobs like trading or perhaps other jobs nowadays like tech or AI. They're not trying to get into government, but they know that in trading is quite interesting in that it really, really heavily rewards people who turn around and say, everyone around me is wrong, as long as you get proved to be right. When I was a trader, I was a very heavily counter-trend trader. So I like to really bet aggressively on things that everybody thought was wrong. And if you do that, you get paid a lot of money. So you have one side of economics, which is the kind of public-facing side, which is the universities, the governments, the think tanks, which really, really punishes people for stepping outside the sort of acceptable box and saying, I think everybody is wrong, I think something different. And then you have another much better paid side of economics, which really, really aggressively rewards people who do that. So obviously, if you are the kind of person who wants to challenge conventional wisdom in economics, there are very, very strong reasons why you might try and go into finance and trading rather than economics. But even if we accept this, that economics as a discipline kind of slightly brainwashes its students into not really breaking the rules and then really pushes the students who are a little bit more inventive in their thinking out of academia and into trading, we're now in a situation where in the last 17 years, living standards have been falling quite consistently. Existing political parties have been losing again and again. They've been consistently failing on the economy. The far right is growing all across the world. There's this outrage against popular economists, popular politicians, against the status quo. It's like really obvious that the status quo is failing. We have in the Labour Party a government that is phenomenally unpopular, looks very likely to lose the next election, is desperately in need of money and new ideas. And yet, despite this like very long-term track record of quite consistent failure, this really powerful demand for new ideas from the public, economists and politicians have still been really, really stubbornly ignoring and unwilling to talk to people like me. And it's not just me. We have other people like Gabriel Zucman in France saying similar things and meeting really strong pushback, even from politicians who are supposed to be on the left, who you might imagine would be more open to ideas like taxing very rich people, reducing inequality. So why is it that economists and politicians have been so stubborn in ignoring these ideas about inequality in spite of the massive popular demand? Now, this, to be honest, is something which I'm not 100% certain on. And it's something which I think about a lot, because obviously we're at a point now on this channel where we've had a huge amount of cut through with the public. And what we are kind of coming up against is we're hitting this wall of politicians and academics and kind of this intellectual middle class who are refusing to accept it. And if we want to actually get this into power, we do need to try to understand why these guys are so unwilling to listen to us, so unwilling to work with us. So I've been thinking about this a lot, speaking to a few different people, and we're trying to understand what it is. And I've got a list of ideas here, which might be what is stopping them from listening to us. And I'll go through them, and you can let me know if you think any of these are right, if you think any of these are wrong, if you think there's anything I'm missing, put it in the comments. But I'll go through the list of ideas I've got here. So number one is, I've got here, the far left theory. And this is that me and my ideas have kind of been branded in the eyes of the political class, of politicians, maybe in the media, as far left. And a lot of politicians don't like the far left, and they are unwilling to countenance anything that is branded as far left. This is very frustrating for me, because I don't come from a political background. I don't come from the far left. My background is, I studied economics at LSE. I was very successful. I got very good grades. I went on to become a trader. I was very successful. I made a lot of very good predictions. I went to Oxford to do a 2-year master's. Again, I did very well. Classically trained economist. And then I've been out here speaking publicly, making very good predictions as well. Like, for me, I have never tried to be far left. I don't come from a political background. I have a very, very good track record of being right. And this is the kind of thing which gets you a long way in the financial world. People will look a lot at what your track record of predictions is like. If you don't believe my track record of predictions, go and watch the video from first ever video from this channel, June 2020. You'll see how good the predictions were just at the beginning. But it does seem like this might be one of the reasons why Labour not listening to us, that they think we're far left. We need to think about how can we try to rid ourselves of that brand. Honestly, you know, I'm an economist. I don't think of economics as left or right. You know, when I look at the economy, when I first started making these bets in 2011 as a trader, because I was heavily financially incentivized to bet on what's right. I've been betting on these things since the beginning of COVID. I've made a huge amount of money. I don't say these things because I have some political motive. I say these things because I have a very good track record of accurate predictions. My current forecasts are for a collapse in living standards. I don't want living standards to collapse even further. But unfortunately, this branding as far left is perhaps one of the things which is perhaps stopping us. I've got here the Zach Polanski theory. I went on a podcast with Zach Polanski, the new leader of the Greens. I asked him, why is there so much resistance? And he just basically said, like, they're all bought. This is it. Like, they're all bought. They're paid for by the rich. Their donors are very, very rich. They go and work for rich people, which some people might say is quite conspiratorial and quite negative. But I think there might be some element of this involved. You know, when we were looking at the Conservative Party, we had Rishi Sunak, who was phenomenally wealthy. We had David Cameron, who went on to make a huge amount of money after leaving office. Before that, Tony Blair made a huge amount of money after leaving office. I don't know what Keir Starmer's plans are, but it does seem that that part of the problem may simply be the political class, especially at the top level, is people who are very rich or are about to become very rich and are often funded by the very rich. That could be an element. That could be an element to it. If that happens, that will be tricky. We have to think about how we can work around it. Okay, I've got here the class theory. This is the theory that basically the kind of intellectual class, Thomas Piketty, the French inequality economist, calls them the Brahmin class. So he uses the term the Brahmin class, which refers to the Brahmins were the top caste in the Indian caste system. And they're basically priests, and uses this term to talk about this kind of group of intellectuals who, high level economists, high level academics, high level journalists, high level politics, media, high level perhaps business, who sort of determine what the public think and control a lot of the media. I've had this theory for a while. When I first started this channel, I didn't know at the time it would become as big as it has done. But a big part of it was, I felt that there wasn't really any sort of economic news source that felt just accessible or understandable to ordinary people. And I was writing for The Guardian at the time. And I really thought, because I come from a working class background and I look and I sound working class, I thought ordinary people would appreciate having somebody from an ordinary background talking to them about economics in a way that they could understand. And that was a big part of the idea of this channel. And that means that really, ever since the beginning, I've always been trying to talk to the public rather than trying to talk to the politicians. And I'm obviously English, and this is a country which has had a long history of a class system. And I do think there is a problem that when especially more middle class people see or hear somebody from a working class background, they perhaps make assumptions that this guy is maybe not smart or maybe not honest. And I do think that that sometimes is one of the reasons why I'm not taken that seriously by these senior Labour politicians. Again, it's very, very frustrating because, you know, I was a very successful, very well-paid trader and I was taken very seriously in that space. And it's very frustrating to not be taken seriously by people who would very probably very happily give me their money to manage. I think a great example of this is when I went on The Rest Is Politics, which is, for those who are not in the UK, the most popular politics podcast here in the UK, has a couple of presenters, one of whom is from a very posh, you might even say aristocratic background. And I made this case to him that I felt like one of the reasons why I'm not taken seriously by politicians is because I'm from a working class background and because of how I talk and because of how I sound. And he replied, you know, I don't think that's right. You shouldn't patronise politicians. I think it's because of your class anger. Which is a wonderful thing to say, really, because it's what he's saying is it's because of my class and the way that I speak, which is exactly what I said in a way. So I put the case to him that posh people don't take me seriously because of my class and how I speak, and he said, no, it's not that. It's because of your class and how you speak. I do think this is a problem. I think the way that we get around this is really, I need yourselves and people like you to try as much as you can to infiltrate those elite spaces. So get yourselves and your kids into fancy universities, fancy jobs, media, politics, academia, banks, finance, civil service, central banking, and get those ideas that way. I would never tell anyone to change the way you speak, but we do need posh people with posh voices, I think, to be taken seriously. The next one I've got here is the Gary is a dick theory. And this is basically the fact that, like, from the beginning, so I've made all my money basically by betting on the fact that economists are wrong. And my whole career history since 2011 is aggressively betting on the fact that economists are wrong. And I do believe, I say it all the time, that I think we have a problem in economics where economists are just failing to recognize this very, very serious problem of growing wealth inequality. And because of this, you know, sometimes the way I speak about economists or politicians or economists in politics is perhaps a bit disrespectful. Last week's video on whether Labour are unlucky or not was actually originally scheduled to be called Why Are Labour So Shit? And this, I think, kind of typifies, I think, a problem that I have, which is I'm very, very frustrated with this political and economic class. And I spoke with Oscar, who is the manager of this channel. And he sort of talked me off the cliff edge and said, listen, if you want Labour and Labour politicians to listen to you, you can't be saying Labour are shit. And the truth is, the history of this channel has been quite a lot of me, sometimes in somewhat flamboyant ways, saying that I think economists and politicians are a bit dumb. And that perhaps worked very well in making this channel very popular, but it's maybe not the best way to get Labour to listen to you. And I've got here attached to this is that Gary is a classist, which relates to the previous issue that people don't like, that the middle class, this sort of intellectual class, don't listen to me because I'm a working class background. I think I do have to accept that to a degree, I am frustrated and a little bit angry with this sort of upper middle class, intellectual class that are allowing the economy to fall off a cliff while in many cases they themselves get richer. This is probably best typified by a video I did really, really early on called Elite Idiots, saying the economy is being ruined by rich idiots. The fact is, the way that I communicate, the way that I talk about economists and the way that I talk about politicians is perhaps a bit rude, and that has probably pissed them off. And we need to think about that because, we do need to figure out ways to speak to these guys. The last one I've got, which is about me personally, is the Gary style of approach theory, which is that basically they don't respect me because I'm coming up through YouTube and they need you to be coming up, you know, the sort of acceptable way. You go and you get your PhD and you work your way through. Just to be clear, I did go and do a 2-year master's at Oxford before I started doing this, and it was just so bad. The quality of education was just unbelievably bad. I felt guilty for having paid for such a poor education. And I could also see, you know, the economy was going to get worse quickly, and I didn't think I wanted to do another 6-7 years wasting my time getting locked in libraries. But this is the truth, right? You know, I think the way that I've come through YouTube, through trading, being a bit rude about posh people was never going to endear me to posh people. So we do need other people to go in, push these theories, push this understanding, not using my face, not using my name. It helps if you've got a posh voice. Just don't talk about me. Take the ideas and run with them. But, you know, criticisms of these last one, all of these ideas are sort of based on Gary specifically is doing it wrong. The thing is, we've got another guy. There's a guy called Gabriel Zucman, French economist, who is doing great work pushing for wealth taxes in France. And he's come at it a very different way. Very academic, got his PhD, very prestigious academic, you know, didn't go through trading, didn't go through YouTube, went direct to the politicians, and he's doing a really, really good job, and we hope he gets it, but he is also getting pushback. And if the problem was just specifically me, then you would imagine that other people in other countries would be doing a better job of wealth taxes. So I'm not really sure whether these ideas that focus very much on me are the real answer. I've got a couple more ideas here. One is the small C conservatism theory, which is basically just that because this Brahmin class, this intellectual class, is largely richer people from richer backgrounds getting paid quite well, they are just very comfortable with the status quo and they don't want things to change. They don't like ideas about taxation because they see themselves as rich. They don't want to pay higher taxes. Next is the big picture thinkers are all in different jobs theory. Which is basically what I said before, which is if you are the kind of person that wants to challenge the status quo, think strategically, you are going to get rewarded much better generally in business or in finance or in trading than you will do in places like politics. You do see a few, well, the most obvious counterexample to that is Dominic Cummings, who was a kind of very radical guy who became very senior in government here before being publicly defenestrated, which means thrown out of a window. Not literally. And the last one here is the social mobility theory, which is basically that, you know, I think back in the day, this country, with young kids like me, it would often, like very smart young kids from poor backgrounds, would send them to grammar school and then would bring them into places like the civil service or like in government. And you did have a situation where a lot of the smartest young kids ended up, in some sense or another, running the country. Great example, this is John Major, who was the prime minister in the early 90s, who I believe came from a very working class family. I think his dad was a clown or something, was it? Something like that. Worked in the circus, I think. But what I went to a grammar school and ended up running the country. And I think if you look at countries like China or like Singapore, they do still make sure that a lot of the smartest kids in their country, or, you know, the kids that do best in exams, end up working in government, end up running the country. So what you see is in the UK in the past and in countries like China and Singapore now, they make sure that the best people, or at least some of them, end up in government. Whereas now, having been to sort of some of the best universities in the country, I can tell you the truth is not many of the smartest kids, especially from poorer backgrounds, aspire to work in government. Just simply because it is really, really not a financially competitive job with things like finance, with things like tech. And what that has led to, I think, is really just basically not a lot of great people in government, really, and which I think is connected to the collapse of the country. But of course, I have to be careful about saying things like that, because as we've established, me loudly saying that I think politicians are not very competent is probably not the best way to win them over. So maybe forget that one. So I'm fascinated to understand why it is. I'm going to go on a bit of a break soon. I'm going to really try to think about why. If you have ideas, let me know. But I think the theory which I think I think is most likely to be true, in my opinion, is this last one, which is called the bubble theory. And this is just that basically, as the economy has become more divided, we have really divided the lives of richer people, you know, the sort of middle class, upper middle class, from the poor. And now we have this situation where most elite jobs, including politics, have a very high overrepresentation of people from richer families, from private schools, from this kind of elite upper middle class space. There are still some working class people in politics, but they're less likely to be at the top and they are a minority in that group, which means the overall culture of the space, elite level politics, media, banking, academia, all of these spaces are very, very middle class. And what it means is you end up in a bit of a bubble where most of the people in this space went to elite schools, come from wealthy families, went to elite universities, end up in elite well-paid jobs, and simply do not have a good understanding of or connection to life for ordinary people. And I see this so often when I interact with people from richer backgrounds and try to tell them what's happening. This real unwillingness to even accept that life is getting worse for ordinary people. You see this all over the media. When I went on Restless Politics, you had Rory Stewart saying, you know, I think life is getting better in America. And then when I went on LBC the other week, you had Tom Swarbrick saying, oh, but things are okay in Australia. Or we saw so much in the US press the last few years, this idea that the vibes are off, which is actually life is getting better. And it's the working class just don't understand their own situation. Or there was the fantastic piece by, was it John Byrne Murdoch? Is that his name? John Byrne Murdoch, the Financial Times journalist, saying life is unambiguously getting better for the poor. I think we have this problem now, as inequality is increasing and as social mobility is decreasing, that when you go into elite spaces like politics, they are really just full of wealthy people who, because we exist in a crisis of inequality, where life is actually getting better for richer people, they simply cannot see or understand that life is getting worse for ordinary people. And I think probably this is the biggest problem we have, the bubble theory, that the people who are in charge of power are stuck in this bubble. Okay, so what do we do? How do we win them over, even though they're stuck in this bubble? Well, actually, in a bizarre way, we have a great opportunity here, because these guys that have been stuck in this bubble have been willing and able to ignore us for a long time. But the reckoning is kind of coming for them, because unless they start taking these ideas seriously, they will continue to fail on the economy and they will lose to the far right. And I think a lot of these people, this intellectual class, really do not want the far right to win. So we do have a really good opportunity here to really keep banging the drum, really make sure these people know if you don't move seriously on inequality and the economy, you will lose to the far right. I think that is a really good message to have, because that intellectual class specifically, that Brahmin class, I think a lot of them don't like the far right. So we have a good opportunity here. But I have to be honest, I'm going to do everything I can to win the next Labour leader. I think we will get a new Labour leader next year. I think probably we won't win them. If we don't, then that leader will fail on the economy and Reform and Farage will win the next election. And they will fail on the economy for the exact same reason. So, you know, I know this is not the best case scenario, because that would then mean 9 years of no wealth taxes, because I don't think we'll get anything from Reform, but it will only strengthen our case. Yes, that might be a bit depressing, the idea that if we don't get the next leader, we can't stop Reform from winning, and then it's 9 years of no wealth tax. But don't lose hope entirely. I think there's a good chance that if Reform win in 4 years, it could be a very small majority. It could be even a hung parliament, so a minority government. That I think they will also become very unpopular very unquickly, because it will be seen that they're going to fail on the economy. And there is a good chance that that government will fall quickly, and it will strengthen our case even further. One thing I can tell you with absolute certainty is every single government you see in this country or wherever you are for the next 20 years will do either one of two things. Either they will give us something serious on inequality and taxation, or they will fail on the economy and living standards. So basically, we can only get stronger until we win. So that's it, basically. We need to keep banging the drum again and again. We need to do everything we can do to de-radicalize this brand, to de-leftize this brand, make it clear that this is not about left or right. This is about, do you want the economy to fail or not? As much as we can, we need to separate the brand from me as a person, which means I need you guys to run with these ideas yourselves. I need you guys to use these ideas in your everyday lives, with your communities, in your job, if you can. But look, I know the situation looks bad, but we are actually in a very strong position, because whoever wins, either they give us what we want or they fail on the economy. And every time another idea fails, we will move closer and closer to being the idea that takes power next. And even if reform do win here, and it's 9 years with no wealth taxes. We're not the only country in the world. This same thing is happening everywhere. You know, I got Chloe Swarbrick on from New Zealand, really largely because I wanted to show you, especially to our British viewers, this is happening everywhere. I think a lot of people think, oh, things are fine in Australia or in Sweden. I was in Sweden earlier this year. Same thing's happening there. Same thing's happening across Europe. Same thing's happening in Japan, which is a country that I know very well. This movement, one of the reasons why I've been traveling around the world is I'm trying to plant this seed everywhere. Because if it doesn't work here, you know, it could work in another country. There's great work being done by Gabriel Zucman in France. We just need one country to manage it, get a wealth tax seriously, and show it can increase living standards. And then we have a much better chance of getting it here or wherever you are. Okay, so I'll keep doing it. You keep doing it. I want to answer the opening question of this video, which is Labour savable? And the honest answer is, I don't know. I don't know. I hope that it is. If we don't win Labour over, if we don't get the next leader, then Labour will lose the election. Farage and Reform will win the election. Living standards will fall. And we probably won't get anything for 9 years on wealth taxes here. That will be serious. Poverty will get worse. Politics can get worse. But look, things will change. I think Labour will get a new leader next year. I know we haven't had much from Labour in the last few months, and it's disappointed me as much as it's disappointed you, trust me. But, you know, Labour have a lot of very new MPs that have only been there 1 year. They're not very powerful. They're finding their feet. I think next year there'll probably be a push to push out Starmer, and a new man or woman will come in. And I think a lot of these new MPs will start trying to find their feet and establish themselves more seriously. You know, we did a call out to Labour MPs a few months ago, and we did get a lot back. We got, I think, more than 10 MPs have asked for meetings, or have given them meetings, and we're trying to meet with all of them, as well as some Liberal Democrat MPs. Look, there are people in there, and we're going to try the best we can to work with them. They're not all dickheads. They're not all idiots. I've had some good meetings with some good people, and I'm going to try my best to build on it. And I know there'll be people out there saying, you know, forget Labour. They're rubbish. I work with Zach Polanski, work with the Greens. I'm talking to Zach. I'm talking to the Greens. We're not ruling anybody out. This is not football. This is serious. Things get really bad if we don't do it. So I'm going to try my best to build something with Labour. And I want to do a message to Labour MPs, because I know I've spoken in ways that are perhaps a little bit disrespectful sometimes. And I'm sorry if I've done that. I'm frustrated. You know, I see living standards falling in this country, in my country. I come from a poor background. I know what it's like growing up poor. And I don't want that to grow. I don't want that to grow. And I've been betting on these things for 14 years. I've been making a lot of money on them. I don't want them to get worse. And I'm frustrated at the lack of support I've been getting from Labour. But I keep turning up. I keep doing these videos because I want to make things better. And you guys, you're in there. You're in the seat of power. Your job is supposed to be to protect the British people. You're unpopular. You need money. I'm here to help. I'm here to help. And I don't mean to say that in a disrespectful way. We will always be open to speaking to Labour MPs as long as the situation is as it is, which is we need you to help us stop this country from collapsing. I don't want the country to collapse. We don't want the country to collapse. Let's try and fix this together. But you need to be open-minded about the economy. You need to be open-minded about the idea that there might be big economic problems that need fixing. You need to be open-minded about the idea that it might not be just about looking at next year's budget and next year's budget. You need to be willing to consider the idea that there might be a big problem of large-scale wealth inequality. You need to be able to consider that distribution might matter, that wealth inequality might matter, that government wealth holding might matter. And I know if you're an economist, these ideas might be like outside of what you were taught and outside of what you studied, and that might be like scary. But look at what's happening. I know if you're from a rich background, you might not see it, but I encourage you to go and speak to people and get into people's lives and look at what is happening to poverty. And look at how much harder it's becoming for people to buy a home. You know, I know big new ideas are scary, especially if you've got like a background in economics. And I know you might think that I'm just some working class chancer or some kind of idiot. But look, I've got the qualifications. I've been to LSE. I've been to Oxford. I did very well. I've got a very, very good track record of predicting as a trader. In the public, you can look at my predictions from 2020. They were very, very good. Work with me here. Work with me. We need to do something. If we don't take action on growing inequality, I absolutely guarantee you that living standards and poverty will get worse and worse and worse and worse in this country. And I don't say that lightly. I don't take that lightly. I'm not just saying it. I'm betting on it. I've been betting on it for a long, long time. I've made a lot of money betting on it, but I'm trying to stop it. If you do not do anything about growing inequality, poverty in this country will get worse and worse and worse, and it will be your fault. Okay, so that's it, right? I'm here. I want to work with Labour. I'm sorry if I've been disrespectful in the past. You know, I speak with my heart sometimes. I'm worried about the future of this country. I know I need the political parties to help me. I will be here to speak to you when you guys want to work with us. People out there who say I should forget Labour and I should work with the Greens, I'll be here, you know. I'll be speaking to the Greens. I am speaking to the Greens. I am speaking to Zach Polanski. I don't rule anybody out, you know. Politics is not football. This is serious. This is your life. This is your kids, your grandkids. Can they buy a house? Can they afford a family? This is too serious to sound only like this guy, only like that guy. I will work with whoever I need to work with to make this happen. But look, if we don't win Labour and reform come in, we keep fighting. We don't give up. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And I want to finish this on a quote, which I've used before on this channel. But since it is a quote from a somewhat legendary Labour MP, I thought I would use it again as an olive branch to the Labour Party, who I've said a million times, I'm willing to work with to make this country better, which is Tony Benn's quote, that there is no final victory and no final defeat, only the same battle to be fought again and again and again. So toughen up. Bloody toughen up. I think that's how it goes. Look, thank you very much for all your support. I know it's a tough time, but we keep fighting. I'll keep fighting if you do. Good luck. Tax wealth not work. Thank you.